All right, let me see how my levels are looking. Pretty good. Fahamu?
Yes, I'm here. Can you see me?
I can see you.
All right.
Well, let's give this thing a shot.
Let's go. Let's do it. What's up, Gene?
Nice to see you.
Good to see you as well, homie.
What's the deal? I mean, you are like, you're super student, super artist, super dad. You got good stuff going on.
Yeah, man. It's a super life. I'll say that. Yeah, it's a super life. But yeah, man, lots of things going on. You know, just started, you know, my final last semester of coursework. I don't have to take any more classes. I'm really grateful for that. I can, you know, really kind of start focusing on my project, you know, that I want to do my dissertation on. And, you know, the art thing is great, man. You know, it's like I'm back. You know what I mean? You know, just had a really great opening in New York, another great opening in Nashville just before that, and getting ready for my first museum solo at the Museum of Contemporary Art, and proud to announce that I'm also going to be doing a show at the High in February.
So, all right, yeah, congrats.
Things are jumping, man.
That's amazing. This, you know what, and I always do this, when, especially when there are people who I'm like super excited to see sitting in the studio with. I forget to tell the listeners who we're talking to. Let's tell them real quick.
Hey, man, it's your boy, Fahamu Peku. Fahamu Peku is the, you know the rest. You know, I'll let you figure out that last little piece. But yeah, it's me, Fahamu Peku, artist, performing artist, scholar, and man about town.
Yes, you are.
Yeah.
And so there's so many different directions. But I guess we should start with... since you started with the education, what made you want to go back to school?
That's really easy, man. I needed some kind of challenge. I wanted to be stimulated in a way that, you know, maybe I wasn't just getting on my own, you know. And I also realized that the work I was doing, you know, this work around Black masculinity, that there's a great deal of work that's been done in academic circles around that subject and around many of the ideas that I was dealing with. And I wanted to just really, you know, have a stronger, maybe not more authoritative, but at least more informed voice in my work. So, you know, being able to visually communicate some of the ideas that were, you know, coming across in these more academic settings. And
you're at Emory.
Yeah, I'm at Emory. And it's been great, man. It's really opened me up in the way that I'm thinking about my work. But also, you know, this is a really great thing. Like, you know, as you know, a PhD program requires a great deal of writing, you know, and that's become a new medium for me to express some of my ideas, you know. So it frees up the paintings in a kind of way. Like, I don't have to try to fit every single nuanced thought into a painting, because I can do that in writing and then let the painting, you know, do what the painting does, you know, let the writing do what the writing does. And that's been really great. It's been really, really like a great medium for me to work through some of these ideas.
You know, I can relate being a returning student, elder education, you know, doing a master's over at Tech.
Yeah.
There's something kind of nice to being a little bit older and going back.
Most definitely. You have a different perspective on what school is about, you know. I keep trying to tell friends and even, you know, some of the younger people that I talk to, like, one of the greatest lessons that I've learned is that you don't work for school. School should work for you. And when you have that mentality, the experience is a different experience.
When did you start back at in the PhD program?
This was the fall of 2012. So that's when I began. It's a 5-year program, so... You know, I'm supposed to wrap in spring 2017.
Yeah. And, you know, over that time, and I've been a fan of your work, your painting, I've seen the work develop. And then I was thinking about this kind of in preparation for today's conversation. I'm wondering, has the work developed or have you developed?
That's a good question. And to be honest with you, I'd say it's both, you know, and that's been the beauty of this project for me. With doing, you know, beginning with the neo-pop paintings and then moving into, you know, Black masculinity and then now moving into various social movements and cultural and historic movements through the artwork. You see an evolution of both me and an evolution in the work. And I think as an artist, that's like a really sweet spot to be in. You know, the work grows with you and you grow with the work.
And with your work in particular, there's an added dimension because you are featured in your own work.
Right, yeah. So, you know, the way that I'm approaching myself as the subject, approaching myself as, you know, just kind of stand in. Those ideas continue to be challenged by my evolution, you know. So with each change, you know, it's my son, who was a major inspiration for me in doing work around Black masculinity, goes from being an infant that I'm just completely in awe of and also intimidated by, as he's now, you know, a six-year-old boy who I'm trying to guide and also who's is in many ways a mirror. You know, I can look at him and see where I need to shape up, you know, and those kinds of things, I think, become reflected in the work.
Yeah, you work in a medium that can allow for that the way that you're doing it. But if you were, let's say, doing more abstract work and you're an artist, you're a painter, you might not, or a photographer, you might not be able to manifest that in the actual piece to where others would know, despite you growing. In yours, I think you can. And it kind of reminds me in kind of a funny way, similar to like a comedian. Like if you think about like Eddie Murphy or Seinfeld, or pick any great one, Chris Rock, like their work, you can see where it starts to be influenced by when they become dads. That's cool.
Yeah, I mean, there's a, I think, you know, one of the comedians who I've heard best express the idea you're talking about is Kevin Hart. He was talking about very, very early in his career, you know, he was advised to bring his real life into his comedy. You know, it's a kind of a vulnerability, a humanity that your audience can relate to. And in doing so, in letting people in that way, you create a deeper connection between your art and your audience, you know, as opposed to trying to position yourself in this, you know, like with this kind of glass protective coating, you know, over you so that people can't actually poke holes. You know what I mean? Like when you put up this kind of wall, when you put up these kinds of defenses around you, like you actually keep people at bay. So the things you want to block out, you know, also keep out things that you might want to let in. So gates work both ways, you know, they keep you in and they keep you out. So being a dad, you know, and, you know, his concerns about, you know, maybe I think I got a dumb baby, like my baby don't do anything but nod his head and fall over. You know what I mean? Like things like that, you know, that you know, are delivered as jokes. But, you know, anybody who's a parent, you know, can relate to those like fears that you might have, like, oh, something's wrong with my kid. You know what I mean? Like, and you know,
does every parent's got to think that their kid's going to become like Harry Houdini.
Right.
So you're coming off of a show in New York, Pursuit of Happiness, right?
So Pursuit of Happiness is an idea that came about as a result of a line from one of the songs that I recorded for my last project that I did in New York. So I did a show in New York in 2012 called All That Glitters Ain't Goals. And for that show, I also recorded an album, you know, a hip-hop album. And on one of the songs that's called Air Conditioning, I have a line where I say, rap was an escape from the trap that once held him. Now on stage, rep the trap is what he tells him. And in that line is, you know, a revelation about the kind of irony of contemporary hip hop and, you know, contemporary notions of success within Black culture. You know, we're often playing to what we think other people want to see from us or other people's idea of what success looks like. And so in my studies at Emory, you know, I'm reading stuff by Foucault, and Foucault has this whole theory on subjectivation and how, you know, one of the facets of that theory is, you know, that we make up in our own minds, you know, this ideal self that's based on other people's ideas of what we should be like, on the perfect person. And we end up chasing that. We end up in the pursuit of that, thinking that that will ultimately make us happy, as opposed to really just dealing with what makes us happy as human beings. We're so often basing everything on looking to be seen as opposed to just being, right? So anyway, with this particular show, I did, you know, a series of paintings and drawings that look at, you know, the kind of irony.
Basically, I mean, just to kind of put it into layman's terms, like you're trying to fit in.
Yeah. Trying to fit in, but not fit in terms of our own personal ideas, but fit in based on a perception of what society thinks, you know, we should be doing, you know?
Yeah. And I know you're going to go and explain more about this show, but the depth of that to me with your work is that on one hand, it's what the subject, in this case, you, is trying to fit in with, not your own volition or mindset, while being completely existential and charting your own path because of what the message you're trying to show, which really gives it great depth.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's just, I just find the whole thing to be like really actually funny. Like it's, you know, it's ironic and it's one of those things that most people don't even realize that they're doing, you know, you just do it blindly. And so that's kind of what Pursuit of Happiness is talking about. And so you see in paintings, you know, a lot of the kind of posturing and stuff that you might see in hip hop culture as being, you know, oh, that person is cool or they're successful, you know, the jewelry and the, you know, the goal. And these kinds of things are expressed through like visual metaphors. Like, for example, in a couple of the paintings, I'm wearing gold tennis shoes, you know, and if you know gold is heavy, you know what I mean? And so, you know, the idea of gold shoes is like you're weighted down, like you can't actually move. And to even further make that idea absurd, like, you know, the laces are like super long and tied together. So you think you're actually getting somewhere, but you're not actually moving anywhere because you're stuck. You're tied to your own movement, or you're tied to your own self, and you're weighted down by these ideas of what success looks like.
And so you're there and you're at the, tell us about opening night in New York, Pursuit of Happiness.
Well,
I mean, you had to feel good, right?
Oh man, it was great. I mean, you know, one of the great feelings was that the exhibition was 80% sold before the show even opened. People were buying the paintings from the sketches that I was emailing to my gallery. Like, this is what I'm working on right now, you know?
Did you call your parents and say, I told you?
Nah, they've always held me down. So,
yeah.
But the opening night was actually, you know, there's no like good story without a little bit of drama. So, you know, I have three drawings in this show that I have framed here locally. And when I packed the crate to send to New York, I realized that I could fit the drawings in there, but it was a little too close for comfort. So I figured I would, you know, box the drawings up and check them in as baggage and just travel with them. You know, I'd wrap them up nicely and travel with them. So I did that. And I get to New York and I'm waiting at the conveyor belt for my stuff to come out, and it doesn't come out.
Yeah.
And I'm there for like an hour and a half, and, you know, it never comes out. And I finally speak to the, you know, baggage people, and they're like, oh, well, maybe TSA went into it and, you know, it missed the flight. So it'll come in on the next flight and we'll deliver it to you. It took 2 days. You know,
yeah, that's stressful.
Yeah, it was a complete mess. I mean, I'm kind of trying to like put it in like a nice little package, but it was a mess. And literally my show opened at 6 p.m. on Thursday. We were hanging those drawings at 6:15. I got them right as we began the opening because I had to send somebody to the airport to get them because it was just a mess. It was too much. And you know, I mean, like, by the time everything was said and done, you know, I was a wreck. But, you know, the opening and everything was successful. Everybody really loved the work, and the feedback and response was really overwhelming. So, you know, it worked out in the end, but you got to have a little drama to go
a little
with
bit.
The good. Yeah.
Well, one thing that's been kind of fun is following you on Facebook and seeing how that show in particular has a life of its own beyond opening night. And you can't say that for every show. In one that struck me, I think may have been today, was the school group that came to the gallery, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's got to like be kind of cool, especially with your educational pursuits, to see.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the things that's like really dope to me, man. And I've been learning this and hearing this more and more in my travels, is that my work has become a part of curriculums in high school classes, middle school classes, college classrooms. You know, like people, you know, professors and educators and teachers are like, I'm teaching students about your work. Like, you know, I've Skyped into classes, you know, because they, you know, it was like, we would love to bring you here, but we can't. Can you Skype with my class? They want to ask questions, you know. I had a group in New York last year. One of the professors had them pick a painting of mine and write a paper based on it, and they shared those papers with me and stuff like that. You know, I mean, it's really cool. It's very humbling. You know, like I'm really appreciative of it, and it reminds me that I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing.
Yeah, you know? And I'm wondering, you know, if you have a similar feeling to me with going back to school, in that you started for one reason, to challenge yourself, mm-hmm. to learn more, to push yourself a little bit, and now you're there, and you're, you know, 2 years in, are you starting to see a different path for what it may come out of it? Is being an educator in your future?
Well, you know, I always have said that I feel like I'm the best teacher self that I can be through my work. You know, like I've never really imagined myself standing in front of a classroom, even though I have to do that. You know, it's part of my requirements for the program. But ultimately, you know, I'm more so interested in public scholarship, which is, you know, basically, you know, taking my ideas and, you know, addressing my ideas in a more public forum. My work as an artist becomes that forum for me. I can, you know, have the same sort of intellectual conversation that Mark Anthony Neal is having in his, you know, Duke classroom with high school students in an art gallery in New York, you know?
Yeah, I do. And in fact, I think what it is storytelling.
Right.
You know, the forum, as you call it. And I feel like, I mean, you're doing that through your art. I feel like I'm doing that through real estate with buildings, because mm-hmm. it's just another medium,
right,
to tell a story through. And I like what's going on with digital media, with social media, and coming together, because these stories are just a way to get a deeper connection, mm-hmm. and a deeper connection equals a greater value, social value, emotional, spiritual, financial, right. cultural, right. whatever value you want to assign to it. And then when you have the value, then people are motivated.
Right.
And we've seen it. You just mentioned it with, you know, being educated through your work. Mm-hmm. We see it through awareness and fundraising of the Ice Bucket Challenge. Mm-hmm. That's not for financial value. They're not getting money. They're giving money,
right.
You know, or you saw it with Arab Spring. You have to have the story. And I like how media is coming together, digital media, to make the other medium more dynamic.
Yeah. And it's, you know, that's one of the really great things about public scholarship, is that it equalizes the way messages are disseminated. You don't have to just get it from a book or get it in a classroom. One of my biggest inspirations in terms of public scholarship is actually Bill Cosby. You know, he has his degree in early childhood development. As opposed to being a professor in a classroom, you know, he developed programming that addressed many of his ideas in childhood development, like Fat Albert and the Gang or The Cosby Show. You know, and these become teachable moments and teachable formats, you know, where you're being entertained but educated at the same time without necessarily realizing it. But it's, you know, it's coming at you in a way that you might even be more receptive to.
And that's okay. It's okay to have fun.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Speaking of fun, it's got to be fun to have some shows at home coming up.
Yeah, man. It's been a long time. You know, I haven't had a show in Atlanta since 2009, I think. Yeah, so it's been a while.
What are we in store for?
Man, you know, this new show is really exciting. It's called Gravity. And this will open at the Museum of Contemporary Art December 13th of this year. The body of work is actually a series of questions. I was thinking about, in the beginning, I was thinking about gravity in terms of this kind of glass ceiling, you know, for young black men. Like, you get to a certain point and you can't actually move beyond, and the kind of frustration, you know, that engenders, you know. But then I began to think about it a little differently, because, you know, that just felt really dark and it didn't quite communicate what I wanted to say. And what I really wanted to say, or more appropriately ask, is what if we didn't weigh down the potential of young black men and black boys with all of these, like, negative, heavy, grave statistics about their existence? You know, we're constantly saying things like, you know, black men are least likely to graduate high school, or more likely to end up in prison, or more likely to be killed, or you know what I mean? Like all these kinds of negative ideas. And, you know, though
you're
many
treating
are,
them like a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Well, yeah, they become that in a sense, because ultimately, you know, if you hear this enough, ultimately you get to the point where you think, well, yeah, maybe my life isn't worth anything.
I got to tell you, man, I went to lunch today at Kinley's. Mm-hmm. They have an amazing baked chicken, by the way, but it's kind of neither here nor there.
Message.
And this, yeah, Kinley's, brought to you by Kinley's. But there was a guy in there, a younger guy, and he said, one of his friends, like, what's up, my boy? And he goes, just another day. But the way he said it was like, he really just, it sounded like, it was like, man, I just have another day.
Right.
It was
right.
Depressing yeah. and shocking at the same time.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I've heard it a lot from young black men who are just like, I don't care. Like, you know, I know I'm 17 and, you know, I just got somebody pregnant, but, you know, that's the best thing that I have to give. Like, you know, now my life is nothing, you know, so I'm making a life because my life means nothing. You know what I mean? Like stuff like that. Or even in my own personal experience, I remember as a young man thinking like, oh, I made it to 18 and, you know, I didn't get anybody pregnant. Oh, man, I'm made it to 21. I've never been to jail. You know, like thinking these things were in my destiny. Like I was destined to ultimately end up in some kind of harrowing situation just because I was a black man, because you hear these things all your life. And so with Gravity, I'm basically asking, like, what if we didn't do that? What if we invested in, you know, flights of fancy for black boys? What if we let them imagine? What if we let them dream? What if we didn't tell them all of these negative statistics? And again, like, some of those things are real. Some of those things are, you know, real indefinite threats, but they don't have to be. Just because something is doesn't mean it has to be that, you know. And you know, and that's where Gravity comes from. So I'm saying, what if we redefine the gravity of the situation for black men? And in doing so, what if we can ultimately defy gravity itself? Like, you can literally, like, black boys could literally take flight if we didn't tell them that you have to be rooted to the ground.
Yeah,
you know,
I think it's wonderful. And I mean, there's this common theme developing of being a good parent too. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of that has to do with like how we teach our children.
Right.
But you have to be around to teach.
Yeah.
And because of a lot of things, there are a lot of single parent homes mm-hmm. out there. I see it like through Big Brothers, Big Sisters. Mm-hmm. These are not at risk youth per se. I mean, 90-something% of them are volunteered into the program mm-hmm. by usually a mom or a grandparent looking for a role model. And I think that, you know, there needs to be some education into, like, this is possible.
Right.
You're not necessarily a statistic.
Right.
And so, like, I like that you can express that through art, but I think we can also do it verbally.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. This is kind of a little bit of a side. There's this, I call him a kid, but that's just because I'm getting older. there's a guy named Jason Ward.
Okay.
And he's actually on Sidewalk Radio's Ansley Park show.
Okay.
Of all shows, I'll tell you in a second. And Jason grew up like inner city Bronx. And as part of basically surviving there, you know, he had to be on the lookout, as he put it, a block ahead and a block behind at mm-hmm. all times, completely aware.
Right.
You know, very perceptive. And the skills that he developed through basically surviving mm-hmm. have led him to become the number two birder in Fulton County.
Oh, wow.
So this guy's an unbelievable birder. He watches birds. He can identify 100 plus by ear.
Wow.
And I was talking to him about, like, you know, when I was a kid, did you want to become a birder? He's like, no. But thinking back on it, his hero was Bill Nye.
Oh, wow.
Science guy. And he goes, what I want to do in my life is become a voice for minorities, especially kids, to show that we're represented. And if you want to become a birder or someone that goes and, like, is a biologist or goes and, like, tests salt water mm-hmm. or, like, you can have fun, do that, but there's a lack of representation in that field right now.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I can say the same for the visual arts, you know, like, yeah, I can't tell you how many, you know, young minority men and women come to me like, how do you do that? Like, I've never met another artist. I've never, the type of art you do, like, I understand that. I didn't know that could be art, you know, like.
Well, how did you become, I mean, how were you the kid that became the artist, or was it just natural?
I mean, I've always been artistic, you know, like, as a, you know, one of my earliest memories is of me drawing, you know, and I've always been very creative. And I knew very early, like at the age of 9, I decided that I wanted to be an artist for my career, but I didn't know how to go about doing that. And I didn't want to be, as the as people described it, a starving artist, you know. And I was also a little bit of a nerd. I used to read encyclopedias all the time. So I used to read about, you know, famous artists and stuff. And I wanted to be an artist who had recognition in his lifetime. I wanted, you know, I didn't want to have to die before anybody was like, oh, well, you know, this guy was a good, you know, artist or whatever. And, you know, I got stuck with it. But I've also been really fortunate to have some really good people around me who believed in me very early on and didn't let me give up, you know, because there have been hundreds of times where I was ready to give up. Like, I don't see a way to this. I don't understand. This is not working out. And inevitably someone would come along out of the blue. Most of the time, somebody that I didn't even know, a perfect stranger, would see what I was doing and be like, yo, let me show you something over here. Keep going. Don't give up. You're good at what you do. I believe in you. You know, something like that to kind of keep me going, just enough to keep me moving. And yeah.
You know, this is something I've been thinking about a lot lately. The spark of the thought happened after Seattle won the Super Bowl.
Okay.
I guess they were talking about, like, you know, they were doing the interviews after and talking about, like, it's a team effort. And I thought, you know what? It is a team effort. Mm-hmm. And then I started, like, thinking in my work, in the work that you're describing right now, even starting out from when you were a kid, to get to the point where you are, it's a team effort.
Mm-hmm.
And to get to where I am and other people who have this sense of accomplishment, it's a team effort. We don't even know people on our team.
Right.
We bump into someone on our team on the street, yeah, and say, keep it up.
Yeah.
Or we had someone on our team that started the High Museum. You can't get to the High without that person.
Right.
You know, and that's just been cool. It's like, you got to know that, like, your team exists and you don't even know them.
Well, and not only that, but you have to really, like, you have to, like, pay attention. Like, gratitude, you know, gets you a long way, you know what I mean? And I think I always try to move with gratitude, you know, even if I don't understand, you know, why someone is, you know, extending a courtesy to me. Like, you know, I try not to be suspicious of it and just be appreciative of it, because you never know where it's coming from. But there's a story that, you know, I haven't told this story very many times, but it's one of the ones that I feel like is an inspirational story for someone who may be aspiring, you know, whatever, if it's an artist or, you know, somebody in business or whatever it is. But maybe about 3 or 4 years ago, you know, I went through a divorce and, you know, things had slowed down for me in terms of the arts. You know, I wasn't selling as much work, and life was just really, really, really hard. You know what I mean? Like, there was, you know, not a lot of money coming in. I was barely making it, you know, from day to day. And I remember that I was invited to present an award at an event that the National Black Arts Festival was doing. You know, they asked me to be one of the people to come up and present an award to another career artist. And they were like, you know, it pays $100, you know, honorarium for your time. And I really needed that $100, you know. You know, I remember I took my children to my sister's, and I was, you know, she lives in Charleston, South Carolina. So I took my children there for the weekend, and I had to borrow money from her to make it back, you know, to Atlanta for the event. And so I'm driving back, and the whole time I'm driving, man, I'm just, like, literally, like, cursing myself out. Like, what are you doing? Like, you know, just get a job, or, you know, just like, you know, you're wasting your time, like, just give up, you know, whatever, whatever. And, you know, I get to the event, I'm backstage, they're giving my script and stuff. I'm actually presenting an award to Thornton Dow, you know. He's getting like a lifetime achievement award, you know. So I go out, I make my presentation, you know, present the award, I go backstage, and then I walk down in the audience to sit down and watch the rest of the show. And just as I take my seat, they're about to present the award for the emerging artist. And they start reading a bio, you know, born, his father's Panamanian, mother's American, you know, grew up in Brooklyn, blah, blah, blah. And I'm, that sounds like me. You know, who's this person? And then they say my name, like, you know, we want to present, you know, this award to Fahamu Peku, you know, who's an emerging artist to watch. We think that he's going to go on to do great things. And I mean,
I just got chills.
Dude, I'm getting honored at an event alongside Thornton Dow and Betty Saar and Samela Lewis and all these, like, really great black artists who've, I mean, not just set the bar, but, like, you know, built the bar in the first place, you know what I mean? And they call me up to stand next to them and receive an award as, like, the next, you know, artist. Man, it blew me away. I was completely unaware. It was a complete and total surprise. I had no idea whatsoever. And I mean, in that moment, man, it was just like, okay, yeah, you're doing the right thing. Like, people are paying attention, and you just got to keep going.
Keep,
you know,
going.
Yeah, you just got to keep going. And that was like a really, like, touch. It's one of the happiest moments of my life. Yeah.
That's really nice. I mean, I got chills because it was so unexpected.
Yeah.
And so nice. And it's an inspiration.
Yeah. So sometimes, you know, we don't see what's happening, but things are happening.
It is. And sometimes what you're doing, you don't even know where you're heading. But if you look back, you're like, oh, jumping from that rock to that rock to that pebble to that rock. Mm-hmm. Now I get it.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
And I think that that's going to happen also with you with school.
Yeah. I mean, I can see it a little bit already.
I got to ask you, though, and tell me if you're really crazy, but now you're going also to get a master's at Georgia State? Is that true?
No, no.
I'm like, what is up with this dude?
No.
I'm like, isn't it? Enough's enough, Bahamu.
Read all the books. Just read them all. No, I you know, like I said, I'm in my last semester of coursework. And, you know, I've kind of exhausted the options that Emory offered, you know, for classes that relate to my specific research project. And Emory doesn't have a graduate level African American studies program. The closest one is Georgia State. So I needed another class. I didn't want to just take something random, like, you know, the science of monkey feet.
Okay, so the student ID is because you're going to take a class at Georgia.
And you have to have it.
Because I was really
going to have an ID, you know. So
I was going to have a chat with you. I can't emphasize enough, and it's taken me a long time to really realize this, but, like, how important doing the reading is.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. There's some people are turned off by the idea of reading. You know, but it's what you read, and reading is not just words on a page. Like, you can read a painting, you can read a song, you know, you can read a person, you know, like, do the reading, like, you know, really pay attention and, you know, get the major points, you know what I'm saying? And once you have those points, then in your own mind, you can begin to put together things about life without having to rely on other people to tell you how it's done. You know, it's like literacy, you know, if you can read, you're not a victim to somebody else's interpretation of what that sign says. You know what I mean? Like, if I couldn't read and the sign said, you know, danger, falling rocks, you know, somebody can tell me, oh, no, that sign says, you know, punch the wall. You know what I'm saying? And I'm putting myself in harm's way because I don't know any better. My ignorance will be my downfall. So, yeah, reading, you know, literacy, like, all of that is imperative to having agency in the world.
Yeah. Now, anyone who knows you and anyone who's gotten this far in listening to our conversation knows that you're not an egomaniac.
Not at all.
But I do think that it's worthwhile to ask how you came up with the idea of putting yourself in like every piece of work.
Well, it started out with the Fahamo Peku is the Shit campaign. And, you know, that was really, in many ways, a joke, you know, but it was also another question. You know, I was asking, what if? And to be more specific, what if a visual artist was marketed the same way that we might market a rapper or an actor or some other kind of entertainer? And why is it that we separate visual artists from the kind of popular culture world in the way that we do? And so what began as, you know, this investigation ultimately became, you know, what you see now, where you see me and all the different pieces. And so, and I also tell people, like, yeah, I'm using myself, I'm using my body, but it's not me. Like, I'm a stand-in for, you know, ideas about Black masculinity. Like, I've become a kind of a model, like a mannequin. You know, I can dress my body up.
A vessel.
Yeah, I can dress my body up in a way that communicates a specific kind of idea. And because it's me across the board, and you see me in these different iterations, it exposes the cracks and the fissures in those kinds of stereotypes. Because, okay, wait, this is not Fahamu, but he's the artist. Why is he showing himself looking like this? And so by exposing those cracks, now you're moved off of your comfort zone, or your, again, it forces you to read. Now you got to read the details. You know what I mean? Like, you can't just glance the title. You got to read the details in order to really understand what's going on.
And have you ever, like, dressed that mannequin in a way that made you feel uncomfortable?
Yeah, definitely. I did a series a few years ago called Stunted Like My Daddy. And, you know, in that series, I was, you know, kind of addressing a hereditary, a sort of hereditary line of opposition and negative image and impositions about Black male bodies, right? And to really have this dialogue, I literally, like, stripped down, you know what I mean? And so, as opposed to the character being dressed up in fly suits, is nude, you know, with just the sunglasses on, you know what I'm saying? And you know, creatively kind of covered up in many ways, but, you know, really exposed in a way. And that was really uncomfortable, not just for me, but also for, you know, the viewers who at that point had become accustomed to, you know, the kind of hip hop bravado, and they were looking for the guy with the cigar and the flashy suits. But you walk in and this was more somber and serious, and there's a naked Black man staring back at you from these canvases and forcing you to engage with his Black body, you know. So yeah, things like that are uncomfortable. And again, I mean, you know, often I'm being very vulnerable about my own realities in terms of presenting these works. My insecurities about being a dad, my insecurities about being a man, my insecurities about being an American, like all of these, or a Black American, all of these things get played out. And, you know, by putting yourself out there in that way, you have to be open to all kinds of things coming back. So,
y'all, you got to go check this guy out. A scholar, an artist, a good friend. Fahamu, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Gene. This has been great. You know, I really enjoyed myself.
It was fun. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.